CliffCentral.com.
I do. Yes, I do. Oxalai. Do you know what the song is?
Hopefully, something like this.
Oxalai.
Something, hopefully, something.
Then at the end of the day, Siajola. That's basically what the song is saying.
I feel like this song should speak to us a lot.
This man did an entire song saying just two things. Oxalai or Siajola. That at the end of the day, whether you do up and down, whether you go from left to right,
whether you march,
whether we are together in this thing.
Some are more together than others. Hello, welcome to the show. It's Frankly Speaking, 1 hour of things you wanted to say, things you wanted to speak about, but haven't found the right place to do it. It's here. It's here with us.
Yeah.
How you doing, buddy?
I'm strong. How are you, man?
Yeah, man. I'm okay. I'm good. I'm getting there. Interesting 4 or 5 days.
It has. I think the big thing is that our Teflon Don remains on the throne.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is why the song is so apt. It's like, you know, at the end of the day, whether we march against this guy, whether we...
He's still there.
Motions of no confidence, whether we NEC him... Oxalayo. we're tied at the hip with this guy.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
We can't get rid of him. Oxalayo. Oxalayo, he's with us, this man. It doesn't matter who speaks out. This man just seems invincible. It's amazing.
What are we speaking about today, Rom?
So the big thing today, frankly speaking, can the promise be recaptured? So there were... yet another report. So after the SACC, the South African Council of Churches, released their report on the state of capture in South Africa, a group of academics, interdisciplinary team across different universities, released a report themselves around the workings of the captured state, basically. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And they called it the betrayal of the promise. Mm-hmm. And they basically go into great detail. And you called me in the middle of the night freaking out as you were reading this report. But the essence of it is that the Zupta axis has managed to execute a silent coup. So what they've effectively done is they've decided to hollow out. So instead of taking over overtly, they've basically hollowed out state institutions and basically repurposed them so that they benefit a few who are linked to the Zupta network. Mm. And National Treasury was the last stand. And with that taken, oh man, it's just it's a looting mania, because the chief procurement officer sits inside the treasury. So all of the government's procurement spend is now under their control. You've got the PIC, the Public Investment Corporation, that is all of the investment money from all the pensions. They've got control over that. They've got control over the SOEs, the state-owned enterprises, and the procurement spend that sits there. So basically, this now enables widespread looting. Mm. And so the big question is, cheapers, we have seen every effort under the sun to try and deal with this and to get it out the way. And can we recapture? Can the country be recaptured? Mm-hmm. Is probably the big question for today.
All right, we're going to be speaking to a very, very, very big activist in South Africa, Mark Hayward. He's on the line at the moment, and we need to get to him quickly because he's got about 16 different interviews and 14 meetings that he should be in right now. Mark from Johannesburg, good morning to you. Welcome to the show. Thank you so much for your time.
Morning. Thank you, producer. The line is awful, and I can hardly hear anything.
Let's try and get you back on the line. Let's phone you back and see what we can do there. Rory, while we're trying to phone him back, let's just understand this for a second. You know, we've been speaking and focused on Zuma, and we spoke to Justice a few shows back, and Justice was very clear that Zuma is only but one of a bigger problem, a bigger network. I think my big question from all of the stuff that's gone on in the last little while is that the NEC is a huge problem, because they've all been captured in some way or form. At least most of them have. Let's not say all. So Zuma goes, right? And he knows he's going to go. And someone else comes in. Let's say worst case scenario, it's Dlamini Zuma. Best case scenario, it's, I don't know, Cyril Ramaphosa. Middle case scenario is it's someone we don't even know. Do you think it's all going to stop?
No, it's an absolute mess, and hence our conversation today. It's very difficult to see how you reverse all of it. Everyone is on the take. Everyone has already had some curry, if not a spoonful, at least they've had a whiff of it. No, but this is what it's called. Everybody is on the curry train, and unfortunately, there's no one who can stand up and reverse it. And unfortunately, it goes down. It replicates itself across the different layers and of society. So it's very difficult to dismantle because you dismantle it, and a lot of people come down. So, but let's check with Mark. Maybe he's got to me. He led March.
March after
he's definitely part of civil society's push against this. And it would be an interesting question to find out if civil society itself isn't captured in any way. Mark, good morning.
Good morning. That is an interesting question, yes.
Mark, who amongst your colleagues is captured?
Well, look, I think it's a serious question. And what I would say is that I think civil society and social justice organizations must be subject to the same level of scrutiny and accountability as we demand of government and as we demand of business. You know, I can certainly say when I speak for the organizations that I'm involved in, that I'm the director of Section 27 and the Treatment Action Campaign, that we are not captured, that we have always pursued an agenda that is the agenda of transformation and equality, which is captured in our highest law, in the Constitution. And we've also always been open about who it is that funds us. But, you know, there is no doubt that around the world, and possibly in South Africa as well, that sometimes movements and organizations are set up precisely to pursue a material or political objective. But, you know, in South Africa, at this moment in time, the movement against Zuktorism, the movement against corruption, it's not a movement that has any hidden agendas. It is a movement that is for the vision of our constitution.
Mark, you speak about this movement, and it's really concerning. It's almost like this movement keeps getting dealt uppercuts with every week. Or is that just an uninformed perspective of somebody who sits on the outside? Zuma has just survived another NEC showdown.
Well, look.
Can the country be recaptured, Mark? I think that's basically what we're trying to get at.
Yeah, I believe the country can be recaptured.
Mm.
And I believe that very significant things have happened over the last few months, not only in terms of what is being done on the side of the corrupt and the corruptors, but also the growing coherence of civil society, the fact that the churches are once again working together with the trade unions and with civil society organizations, the fact that we know very, very clearly now the contours of state capture. We're knowing increasingly clearly who the capturers are, who the individuals are, what their behaviors are, what their networks are. I don't think that, you know, it's correct to say that civil society has taken up a cut. This is going to be a protracted battle. Even if we are successful in bringing about the resignation of President Jacob Zuma by lawful means, that's not going to be the end of the day, because we know that this is a cancer that is deeply rooted and is going to have to be treated. And so we, you know, I think what we're having to look at is how do we build a new politics in this country, and how do we build a new politics that is about reconstruction and renewal and equality, and use the forward movement around that to excise the problems that we're talking about this morning.
Mark, you're speaking in very metaphorical terms. Practically, what does that look like? So it feels like the rot has extended across you know, across state institutions and so on, you chop off the head, another one pops up. Practically, what would it look like for us to recapture the country?
Well, first of all, there's one head, continue with your use of metaphors, that really, if it is chopped off, will make a difference, because the pillar that is holding a lot of this up is the president and the powers that are vested with the president. It will be far more difficult to sustain this if the president is removed and is replaced with a person of proven integrity. What does it look like practically? Well, again, this is dependent on removing the president, but a focused judicial commission of inquiry into this state capture, where the evidence that is now circulating can be properly presented, properly assessed, and where criminal charges can then follow against the people who have behaved unlawfully and criminally, would go a long way towards doing that. I'm afraid that we need to then look almost in every government department at what has happened in a government department. So let me take health, for example. You know, I do a lot of work, obviously, Section 27 in the health department, so we know what happens in the health department. We know, we've actually researched it several years ago, what is the sort of modus of theft in the health department? Where are the vulnerable points, places for theft? We have to close those down. We're not able to close them down, for example, in the Free State at the moment, whilst you have Premier Ace Makhachule, who himself is directly involved in state capture. So it's going to be a complex process, but we know a lot about it. And what we need is the will to tackle it. And what we have to continue to do as civil society is not think that a few little NGOs and people in the know can deal with this. We have to do far, far, far more now to mobilize people in this country, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of ordinary people, to challenge corruption and bad governance wherever it occurs, whether it's in a local school, whether it's on a hospital board, to know what their rights are and to take it on. So let me just say this. I wouldn't for one second underestimate the size of what confronts us.
Yeah. But what do you, so people will say, yeah, but we have marched. We have seen the Seriti Commission that was supposed to be an independent commission of inquiry. That didn't get anywhere. So all of the things that you are proposing haven't proven themselves to be effective in this battle, one might argue. So what is it that needs to change about the way we're doing this that's going to fundamentally change things? It seems that even our marching, even our protesting, even the prospects of the ANC losing power in 2019 are not enough to make these guys change. So what then needs to change to make sure that we actually see a difference?
Well, what I would say to you is that nobody should have the idea that one march is going to solve the problem. But take the march that took place in Pretoria to the Union Buildings on the 7th of April, which we organized, Save South Africa organized. You know, that exceeded our expectations. Nearly 50,000 people on the streets. That emboldened people all over the country to start to look more closely at this issue, to organize their own demonstrations. That played a part, in my belief, in emboldening organizations like the SACP to begin to speak out into a space where they had kept quiet. It emboldened the South African Council of Churches with the research that they were doing in the unburdening, what they've called the unburdening process, the unburdening panel. And that's why I go back to the point that what we've seen over several months now is a rising opposition. But it's a rising opposition not through political parties, it's a rising opposition through civil society organizations. But the job is not done yet. So, you know, I would urge people not to think that single actions or events can resolve this problem. I would urge people to see that each action plays an incremental part in taking this movement forward. You know, you mentioned the Seriti Commission. nobody had their eyes on the Sarisi Commission. Next time, you know, if we can get a judicial commission of inquiry into state capture, we're going to have to watch that very closely. We're going to have to make sure we make submissions for that. You can't leave it to a small group of organizations, as happened with the Sarisi Commission. And, you know, my opinion, honestly, is that state capture didn't start with the Guptas. State capture, at least the latest round of it, started with the arms deal. Because that is when companies and individuals started to purchase power over our politicians.
Mark, just before we let you go, firstly, congratulations on all the work that you've done. You are a true South African activist, and I think in the future people will call you a hero at some stage, if they don't already do. But in your most somber moments, in the moments where you're by yourself, you know, I know Comrades is coming up for you this weekend. You do a lot of running by yourself in the middle of nowhere. Those moments where you get very down, depressed, and you don't see the light, what are the thoughts? What are you thinking about? What's the feeling?
Well, you're right. There are moments.
Because we see you as the optimist, right? We're like, well, it's all going to shit, but let's speak to Mark Hayward because he's always positive, right? But, you know, of course you're human, so you have negative and sad and depressing moments as well. What is your feelings in those moments around what's happening in state capture at the moment?
Well, it's very depressing. I felt very, very depressed over the weekend, at the end of the weekend, when it became clear that the ANC-NEC had failed to do the right thing. And I realized afterwards that what was making me most depressed was not that I didn't expect politically that this would be the outcome at this stage, but the failure of the human being on the NEC to show that they have morality, to show bravery. It was a huge personal disappointment, and that carried right into my soul, because I like to believe in the good of the vast, vast majority of human beings, and I still like to believe in the good of the ANC and in most of the upper echelon of the ANC. So there are moments of loneliness. There are moments of self-doubt. There are moments of questioning. And there are moments where you sometimes feel so tired that you think, well, maybe I should just do something else. But those moments are fleeting moments. And for me, what usually pulls me out of those moments is engagement with other activists or other ordinary people who are doing their best to try to make this country something that we can joy in. It's not just believing. It's not just having a good politics, but something that we can really joy in, because we have a rich and beautiful country and a rich and beautiful people. We're capable of so much more. And that is what picks me up and will keep picking me up, to be quite honest with you.
Mark, thank you so much for your time. I know you've got about four different interviews to go to, so we really appreciate it. Thank you for your enlightening comments, and let me just say good luck with Comrades. I'm sure in those deep and dark moments on the 13-hour trip, you'll have a lot of introspective moments, and hopefully by the end of it, we'll have a great Facebook post of what to see the future, because you've probably seen it in those moments of pain. So thank you so much, and all the best.
You're quite right. Thanks for that. It's going to be lots of time to think deeply. Yeah.
All right, Mark. Thank you so much, friend. All the best.
Cheers.
Mark Hayward, Section 27, doing fantastic work. It must be difficult seeing the amount of capture going on. And
do you think we're captured? We're having a very one-sided conversation about this. We have decided that Zuma is guilty. Mm. We are not even taking his side of the story into account. And we've just decided he must go. You think we're captured?
We're captured by the media, monopoly capital interests. No. I think it's
How do you know? Because you actually haven't done any counter research, right? You haven't. Have you spent enough time watching ANN7? And
no, I don't.
So every now and then on these issues, now I switch to ANN7 right, just to get like an alternative view,
a balanced view,
just to see like, okay, how are they spinning the stick, right? Yes. And yes, it sounds ludicrous, but I often ask myself, does it sound ludicrous because I am captured by the other side, or is it ludicrous because it is objectively ludicrous?
But what are the interests of the other side exactly? You're talking about, are we captured? What are the interests?
No, it's the same. Everybody's trying to get our everyone is trying to get our us on board this this train that goes against everything that is Zupta. So they're all competing. Both sides are competing for our attention and our energy.
Before we answer that, because I think we can answer that, let's speak to Mark Swilling. He was one of the instrumental people in the report, The Betrayal of the Promise. Mark, thank you so much for joining us. I know you don't have a lot of time with us. Thank you for joining us today. We're speaking about how do we recapture the captured state? How do we recapture the promise? The report, what sparked it for you? What was the moment where you're like, right, we're going to get involved in making this report?
Basically, it was the cabinet reshuffle and the press conference that took place afterwards by Pravin Gordhan and Jonas, where Gordhan refers to the need to join the dots. And, that's really what academics are supposed to do. And when I looked around the academic community and ask, you know, who's doing work on this to provide some kind of framing or meaning of what's going on, there wasn't a lot. So that really was the moment.
And if you look at what then happened from that moment where you guys realized, okay, this is what's going on, was the other side ever looked at? Is there anyone doing work on this from the Zupta point of view, who would argue that this is a conspiracy and so on and so on?
Is anyone doing work on this from the perspective of
the Zupta side,
the Zuma government?
Yes.
There's a whole very well organized media campaign in the Twitterverse and beyond to construct a discourse on white monopoly capital as a kind of smokescreen for what's really going on, and then everyone gets branded accordingly.
And none of your academic colleagues have taken this up and are researching it from that point of view?
From that point of view?
Yeah.
Chris Malekani, professor of economics at Brit, is an advisor to Minister Gigaba and has provided a kind of Fanon-esque framing of radical economic transformation, and essentially argues that you can't make an omelette without breaking the egg. If breaking the egg means dismantling a whole bunch of constitutional framework, then that's the price that you need to pay.
Mark, so a lot of what is in the report is really scary, but well done on that, but it is really scary. How much of it would you say is just subjective inferences, and how much of it are just objective truths? This is exactly what has happened. There has been a silent coup. People have done the things that, or because in joining the dots, sometimes you make inferences because you don't have objective evidence to prove. To what extent is this an objective truth in the report, and to what extent is it a lot of subjective inference?
Well, I think it's neither. Social scientists don't use those categories of subjective, objective. What we are constructionists in the sense that we take what evidence there is available, both from interviews, newspapers, court records, and a collection of empirical data, and all of that information is itself constructed by people who are putting together data and information in ways that suit them. So the job of the academic is to develop a conceptual framework that is rooted in the literature in order to interpret what's already going on, a set of interpretations in order to give meaning. And we are not saying we are right. We're not claiming that this is the truth. We're saying that if this is a useful framing that helps you understand what is going on, from your perspective, use it. If it doesn't, don't use it.
Mark, I'm very interested in the report. It was fantastic. Congratulations to you and your team. I'm not as much on the fence as Rory. Rory's trying to be show a balanced view. He's trying to figure out. He's been captured by someone else, maybe, potentially. But I'm more interested in the reports. There were probably moments that you and your team had a piece of information, couldn't create that framework that you were speaking about earlier, and so had to leave it out. Anything of interest to you there that we won't hold you to, and you clearly didn't put it in the report, so it's something that is a bit more hearsay-ish or didn't fit into your conceptual framework that would be interesting to hear about?
Well, I don't think that's not really what happened. What happened is there's a whole bunch of stuff that is too dangerous to publish because we would put ourselves at risk in legal terms. And we would also put at risk sources. So, you know, you have a conceptual framework, you have a whole bunch of material that you can use and a bunch of material that you can't use. And then you walk a very fine line, between those two. So that's really, I mean, just to give one example, there's quite a number of, pieces of really good pieces of evidence of how very good BEE companies have lost our contracts to Gupta companies, even though their prices were lower.
Mm.
So in the name of black empowerment, radical economic transformation, there's a whole bunch of really good BEE companies that are losing out. So there are specific cases of those that we have. But the sources are too easily identifiable.
Ah, I see.
And we don't want to put them in danger. So we have to find other sources to confirm what we already know in order to mark the original source.
It's
That takes time.
Sounds like you're not being academics, you're being brilliant investigative journalists. I think there'd be some very, very powerful journalists who would be proud of you right now. There's something interesting in your report that did spark my eye, which was this, two things actually. The first was the Russian influence, and this idea of, for lack of a better word, because I don't have the language, Russian spies, effectively, or someone reporting back to the Russian government. And also the fraudulent behavior of money transferring out into Dubai, I think you mentioned Hong Kong and India.
Yeah.
I mean, that's absolutely crazy. And, you know, a lot of the stuff one could say is nepotism and, oh, you know, like it's just this guy getting a deal, a tender deal, so there's nothing wrong with it. But surely some of those sources, some of those links that we're talking about money laundering, I mean, clearly quite illegal, by any stretch of the imagination, is there no way that one could be tripped up, the Guptas could be tripped up through looking into some of those sources? And, I mean, the Russians having spies in our government, I mean, that's tantamount to what's that beautiful word?
Espionage? I don't know.
Treason?
No.
What are your thoughts on that, Mark?
Well, I mean, these are not spies. These are members of Russian intelligence that are openly in certain operating in key corridors of power in order to influence the decision making around the nuclear deal in particular. And quite a number of these, like if you, some of the representatives of the Russian nuclear company, quite openly say, listen, we already have an agreement. This just has to be implemented. But in practice, there isn't an agreement because as the court has ruled that the procurement procedure is illegal and needs to be kickstarted from the beginning.
Mm.
And, you know, we still have a constitutional democracy which puts in place all sorts of constraints, which is not the case in Russia. So the Russians don't quite understand why we can't. What's the problem? Why don't you know, the president has decided, let's just build the bloody thing.
Yeah.
So there's a kind of frustration on their part. I mean, on the flows of illicit finance into especially to Hong Kong, which is, you know, the global capital for money laundering.
I think the emergence of these emails, there's rumors that there's a couple of 100,000 emails in kind of data caches that might land up on WikiLeaks type websites or wherever they're going to land up. Once those are in the public domain, which is, you know, pretty much a matter of time, then it's going to be possible for researchers to comb through them and find the little rat tails that are necessary in order to really get a much fuller picture of how it actually works. And then that provides the basis for, could feed into the Judicial Commission of Inquiry, which the NEC now has approved must go ahead.
Mark, just last question as we let you go. So you have constructed a conceptual framework around how this is happening. How would we recapture the country based on this conceptual framework? Where are the weaknesses within this network that we can exploit to recapture the country on behalf of the people?
Well, there's many weaknesses. That's often what happens in these kinds of systems. It's a very unstable, crisis-prone network. In a den of thieves, there's always one or two thieves who fall out with the rest and are interested in talking. And the South African Council of Churches provides an unburdening panel for those kinds of people. There is the Judicial Commission of Inquiry, which then becomes a key focus. It's going to be a bit like the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, kind of center of attraction for quite some time. And then there is the talk of a broader popular front coming together of major forces and parties and social movements. And then there is the press, just to kind of continue hammering away, breaking the story. Quite often at considerable risk to the people who do the work. That's how I would summarize it. Those are the fronts.
Fantastic. Thanks a lot, Mark, for your time. Keep on the good work. We will continue to ask on both sides of the issue. This is a very interesting thing to be just a normal South African watching everything, because you just don't know what truth is anymore. So please continue to reveal the facts and the issues so that we can deal with them and try and figure out how we move this country forward.
Okay, sure.
Mark, thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
All the best. Mark Swilling, he was one of the authors of Betrayal of the Promise. It is a 72-page fantastic read.
It reads like a novel.
It reads like a murder mystery. I'm surprised no one's been murdered yet that we know of that's in the public domain. I really am. I think that's been
murder's
one thing.
Murder's too messy.
Maybe.
That's how you begin to create the trail of blood.
But the mafia, they put the swim with the fishies. You're gonna swim with the fishies.
This is not the mafia, man. This is
the mafia. Let me tell you something. This is 100% the mafia. If you read the book, I need to find out that author. He looked back at the entire Gupta history in South Africa. It is seriously, absolutely absurd. This started in 1996 when the Guptas first came to South Africa. They originally tried in China, but didn't have any luck there because the laws were too stringent on foreign interests and foreign investments. And then they came to South Africa, and they have been pumping out ever since. This is the mafia.
I want to get back to the idea of the mafia, but before that, let's get General Bantu Holomisa on the line, the leader of the UDM. General, good morning.
Good morning.
Just a quick one, General. So we have seen now marches have happened. The NEC seems to have failed. Where to from here? How do we recapture this captured state? After this report, Betrayal of the Promise by the academics, things look really, really gloomy. What is it going to take to ultimately recapture this captured state on behalf of the people?
Well, it looks like we will witness this until 2019. So we are left with almost 3 years for the voters to once more show their disgust and anger by voting ANC out. But we are also happy that there are some members now within the ANC who are trying something. Remember last time when we raised vote of no confidence, it was just dubbed as a thing of the opposition. Now, senior members in the ANC, including some cabinet ministers, are saying no, no, no. So one can conclude now that indeed ANC is run by cliques, cartels, or factions, or it has factions.
General, how do we wait until 29? That's 2 years, and based on this report, it looks like these guys are doing quick work of hollowing out our state institutions and so on. Will there be anything left for us to salvage by 2019?
If that message or that question you are asking were to be drilled into the minds of the members of Parliament of ANC to save the situation in a short term by supporting a motion of no confidence in Parliament, which we have already filed. So I hope that they can help us. But if they pull the party line, the party's party line, and then you must know that the ANC indeed put interest of the party and their leaders ahead of the nation.
But General, wouldn't you do the same? So if you are, let's say, one of these ministers, and the president has said that if you push me too far, I am going to speak, what would you do as one of them? Because that's the situation they find themselves in. It's never mind what's good for the country, it's what's good for me. The president has threatened to speak. What would you do, and what would be your advice to them?
Well, the easiest way, if they are sincere in what they are doing, is simply to pitch. The cabinet must resign and mass as a way of protest. Sometimes we are going to soon dub them as hypocrites. Why do they stay there on attacking, and then the following day they go kneeling in front of the president for their salary?
Yeah. Oh, it's really a hard one. I mean, I can imagine people who have smolanyana skeletons in their closets, busy contemplating that, hey, if I do quit and if I do this, that means I'm off to jail.
Unfortunately, if they were to do that, they would vindicate those who say that the corruption is eating into the body politic of ANC like a cancerous tumor. That would vindicate us who have been saying the whole body is rotten.
Yeah, right from the head down.
General, yeah. I have a bit of a weird question to ask you. If in a weird, different world, we got to a space where there was a commission of inquiry and it said that all parliamentarians will now be investigated. If you want to do this, if you want to investigate the ANC and the bigwigs, President Zuma and the rest, we will need to investigate all parliamentarians for everything that they've done, everything that they've been involved in. How many of the parliamentarians from opposition parties do you think would actually be willing to do that?
Well, I think we must not mix the issue. Deal with Zuma and the government of the ANC. But if there is a compelling reason why you want to include the MPs, I'm sure the MPs of the opposition would not mind. After all, they don't have access to state resources.
General, last question as we let you go. What comes next? So the last time we spoke to you, it was just before the marches with all the parties and with the trade unions. That's done now. The NEC has tried its bit. What's the next thing for ordinary people who are watching this and want to get involved?
Well, the more they keep Zuma in power, the more they organize for the opposition. Mm. What we need to do now is simply to go out and educate the voters.
Mm. Okay, well, thank you very much, General, for your time this morning.
Thank you. Thank you.
Jeesh, Andrew, I'm hearing educate the voters 2019. I'm feeling like there is no, like that's 2 years. So
I'm feeling like in 2019 we're not going to have anything to do.
It's quite interesting. It's quite interesting. I'm really, really worried. Let's see. I don't think that we've got 2 years to spare.
The thing about it, Rory, which is interesting to me, is this idea that this is the devil we know, right? So this is the people we know are capturing our state. What comes next? If we've built a system, a political system, an economic system that has allowed for these people to take over like this, in this way, surely we should be worried about what comes next. Let's just say the ANC loses in 2019, right? And we get the DA in, for example. You know, all these criticisms of the DA and who actually runs the DA would be seriously worrying to me personally, because we've seen in the public domain how the DA hasn't dealt with one of their former leaders. The DA has some very interesting investment holdings in compromised countries. And so would the system that we've created just allow for those people to take over from the Guptas? Would we be turning a surname of the Gupta into a different surname? If the EFF came in, we've seen that their leader, Julius Malema, has been compromised before. I mean, at age 30, to have a tax bill of close to 23 million rand is unheard of. So is he compromised as well? So I'm more concerned that the system that we've created and allowed to create through this looting means that, you know, it doesn't matter who comes next, because the same people, the same capitalist interests will then try and take over them as well.
Yeah, it's I mean, if you look at, they spoke about earlier, I think one of the marks spoke about we need to chop the head off, which is remove the president, right? And he says that by doing that, a lot, because he's a central pillar in this thing, a lot of this will disintegrate. And I'm like, yeah, well, is the problem the person of the president, or is it the role of the president, right? So whoever comes in and is vested with the same powers that the current president has.
Mm.
Once that person is vested with all of those powers, what do they do with it?
Mm.
You know, it looks like we don't have adequate checks and balances within our constitutional system that make sure that when a guy goes rogue, as our president has, that we don't, that he doesn't have the power to just do what he wants willy-nilly. And that is very worrying, right? I mean, the fact that with all the facts on the table and so on, this man has the power. He is the only person who can commission an inquiry into himself. That is just weird. It's concerning and it's weird. So I think the big thing is, how do we make sure that we move, and that's a two-thirds majority that would be required to make a constitutional amendment that would ensure that we've got checks and balances in place. We've heard previously how the argument has been that we created the constitution around the idea of a Mandela as president, right? Somebody that could be trusted, somebody that had that was perceived to have integrity and so on. Unfortunately, we hadn't anticipated that everyone that comes after him is not Mandela.
Mandela-esque,
and they're going to behave in ways that really make us regret what we've done. Now, is it possible? Right now, you can't even get the ANC and the DA to agree to us creating laws that basically make it transparent that we see who funds who, right? So it looks like, again, where politicians have their own interests at heart or at stake, they won't act, right? The DA and the ANC collectively can ensure that we have a more transparent a view
system, yeah,
around a party funding, and they're blocking that, right? So would they also, if they anticipate that 2019 they might be president and so on, would they also then be able to come together and say, right, let's weaken the powers of politicians. Right? They're already squealing about the courts and how the courts keep getting in the way of the executive in terms of doing their job. But you know, so would they basically vote for? Would the turkeys vote for Christmas? I don't think so.
You know, Rory, the one other thing that I was thinking about is when you say cut off the head. And we talk about South Africans and our agency, specifically the middle class and the elites. I wonder what it would take for the average South African, well, not the average South African, the middle class and elite South African, who's got money, who's got agency, who's got big business, and who's doing business with a Gupta or a minister, or a company that a minister is involved with, for them to say, no, you know, we're going to stop doing this. We saw it a little bit with the JSC saying that Oak Bay couldn't be registered. We saw it with some of the banks. But there are still deals going on. You know, these people don't live within a vacuum. Hmm. We're giving them space to live, effectively. The Guptas are allowed to do what they do because people are doing business with them. Now, if we were really concerned about this, surely it would be a situation of saying, let's hold South Africans to account, specifically South Africans with big money, and say, how do we stop letting these guys trade here?
But this is, you see, again, this is where the problem is to what extent and on what grounds, right? So we have created this boogeyman in the name of the Guptas,
but it's not a boogeyman.
But it's not just, no, it's a boogeyman. It's now like the Guptas are, and it's fine, right?
There's evidence, Rory.
But there's evidence
boogeyman.
Against other people. So
yeah,
are we going to shut their accounts as well? So
absolutely.
You see,
let's deal with
everyone.
But
I don't think, but then that's where we get compromised because a few of the banks' buddies also have dirty hands. And so then the question becomes, so you're going to shut down them. What we're straying into here is into lawlessness, right? Is into discrimination, is into the fact that people can be denied services on the basis of my opinion of how they haven't been. So we have to remember these people haven't been taken to a court of law. They haven't been declared guilty of anything, right? So in and amongst all of this thing, it doesn't mean that I believe that they aren't, their hands aren't dirty, but they haven't broken a law in terms of the courts deciding that they have broken a law. If we begin to go extrajudicial around, you know, pronouncing judgments and guilt and then taking action, where does that stop?
I think that what it's showing to me is that South Africa is completely compromised. And I think they have been found guilty of doing dodgy deals.
They haven't been found guilty. Where have they been found guilty?
Well, let's think about this, right? When you take Des van Rooyen on a trip to Dubai, right? What
again,
do you want Des to do?
No, but
in
that is, they haven't been taken to a court of law and declared guilty.
When you take the minister to Switzerland to organize a deal for you,
they're the only ones who do that.
This is what I'm saying, Rory. The whole of South Africa is compromised, and it's time that we stop worrying about our personal attributes in this and say, if we want to make a real change, because let's be honest, 40 million of the 50 million are still closed out from this economy because of exactly what's going on here. So I agree with you. It's not just the Guptas. There's a whole bunch of other names and surnames that should be involved in this, but then we've got to close them all out. That's the fair thing to do. We got to really look into every single one of them, and if they are dodgy,
so,
we need to close them
so
down.
So who's we?
I have no idea.
Because that's the thing. The people that have the power to make this change and this difference are the very same people who are exploiting the system, and that is the challenge, right? Is you have big business and so on. Look at what came out recently around transformation, right? That is comparably, relatively, a small thing to fix in the broader scheme of things. If they're not going to fix that, what makes you think they're going to fix systems in which they benefit to this extent? This idea that There are parts of the system that are more moral than others, I think, is balderdash. I think the whole point is we change hands. The plate changes hands, and different people eat at different times, and they fight over the spoils. And but the system itself does not change. And I think there is a broader question that we need to be asking ourselves: is so how do we disrupt the system? Is there a way of disrupting the system? Because sooner or later, you and I become old, we get kicked off air, we decide to go and spend our retirement on boards and stuff, and then we're captured. Now we stop speaking like this, right? I heard a story last week around, I think it was an arms trader or someone who used to do deals with the apartheid government. And he was asked when, at the dawn of democracy, he was asked, "Cheapest, aren't you worried? Your business is about to go down the drain now. You're going to be, there's a new government in place, you know. You were dealing with the apartheid government and now." And he looked at them, he said, "You know, what you don't realize is every politician has a price. Right? All I need to do is find the price for the new guys and business continues as usual." And apparently business continued as usual.
I'm sure.
Right? So everyone has a price, man.
But this is the point. Maybe we need to reevaluate our morals in South Africa specifically and in the world, because, you know, this is not just a South African thing. We see what's going on in America and it's hilarious.
So we can pontificate all day about politicians.
No, but it's not. Let's just talk about
you and I,
right?
In our domain of power, yeah.
Let's talk about you and I. Yeah. Right, there will come a moment where, specifically more probably with you because you're a big businessman and I work for an NGO, right, where you're going to have to make a decision. You're going to have to make a decision.
Yes.
Right? And then it comes down to all these conversations that we've had on Frankly Speaking and individually and in your own life, where you then have to say, what do I do? And I'm hoping,
never mind the
I'm
future.
Hoping that you will make that decision, the right decision.
Never mind the future, Andrew. In our current domains of power, we live within this unjust system. We benefit from this unjust system in various ways. What are you going to do about it? And the fact that we don't do anything about it, though we speak about it every single week, just demonstrates that, you know, and I don't want us to leave the show with like, oh my goodness, we're all screwed. But
I think
we have the power. So in Barclays, 2 weeks ago or so, a group of young professionals walked out after the announcement that another senior black exec had resigned and so on. So they took a stand. And where was everybody else when they were walking out, right? Mm. We have the power. So imagine if we all began to walk out of the corporate boardrooms in which we just feel that the injustice is too much.
Mm.
We have the power, but are we doing it, right? And I take my hat off to some of those young professionals, some of them I know personally, who put their jobs on the line and said, this does not resonate with the values that we stand for.
Mm.
We're going to take a stand. Then the question is, okay, what comes next? So you walk out and then what? So we have the power where we are to begin to disrupt the system in small ways and in big ways. What are we going to do about that?
I think that's the good question and that's a good challenge, Rory. Maybe it's time to stop looking at the Guptas. And maybe it's time to start looking at ourselves and go, how are we our own Guptas in our own worlds? And what are we doing about it? And what's our change that we want to make? And I think that's a good challenge. Maybe we need to have a show around that. Maybe we need to get a whole bunch of young people in here, our age. So it's not people that don't have agency. You know, we're starting to get agency in the world and say, what are we doing?
Yeah, it's. I think that's the big thing.
And what can we do? Because that's the other thing, you know. There's too many people sitting on the fence going, I don't know what to do in this world, you know. And there's very simple and small things that can be done, right?
Yeah, and that's the thing, right, is we can actually do stuff today. And what are we going to do? How do we disrupt these systems? Because before we speak about a tax boycott, where we all risk going to jail, let's speak about the things that we can do today within the organization, a conversation that we can have that isn't been had, a confrontation that needs to be had with somebody that hasn't been had. Those are the small things that we can begin to do so that we can eventually get to a tax boycott. By the way, are you paying your e-tolls?
No. I've boycotted e-tolls.
Are you boycotting e-tolls?
No, not
at the start.
But not paying. I'm just not going on the highway. It's a very good question, Rory. It's a very good challenge, and I think we should take it up more on this show, because we need to stop looking at the other and start looking at ourselves. The other is still a problem, and let me tell you, I don't care what you say about being balanced. The Guptas need to go, Zuma needs to go, and Gigaba needs to go, and all the rest of them need to go.
Yeah, bo.
Thank you. But we also potentially need to go.
Yeah, bo.
And we need to figure out what we need to do in order to change.
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you so much to our guests, the two Marks, Mark Hayward from Section 27 and Mark Twilling from the report released, Betrayal of the Promise, and of course to the general, Mr. Bantu Holomisa. Thank you very much for joining us on the show. Hey,
let's get out of here, homie.
Get out of here, dog. All right, we'll see you later. Ciao.
Jovicho.
CliffCentral.com.